Dr. John, Dr. Leaser, and Dr. Zeiger, thank you all for being here.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
I'm looking across the table at you, three professionals with extremely demanding schedules, and yet you've all taken the time to come in here today for this conversation. You've also taken the time to contribute your essays, your memoirs to this new anthology, Being a Woman Surgeon. And so I ask doctors, what is important to you about sharing your stories? And Dr. Preeti John, I'll begin with you as the editor of this anthology, the person who collected the personal stories of 60 women in your profession.
Sure. I work at the Baltimore VA Medical Center and come across several medical students and residents who ask me what it's like to be a surgeon. And I thought it would be nice to collect stories and share them with trainees, with women in other professions, and just exchange experiences that we've shared as a way of letting other people know what our lives are like in this profession. And that's what motivated me initially.
Dr. Zeiger, let me turn to you now as the most senior of your colleagues and ask you to tell the story of how your career began. This is a medical career that started, as I understand it, in the U.S. Navy in the 1970s.
Yes. It took me a long time to decide to go into surgery because I had never seen any role models in surgery. I'd never seen a woman in surgery. So it took multiple iterations throughout my training and throughout my time in the Navy to come to the conclusion that I wanted to be a surgeon regardless of no role models. I was married. I had two children. And when I decided to interview for surgical residency, I was actually pregnant, 7 months pregnant, with my second child, which was truly an anomaly and something that I had to overcome during my interviews, as you can imagine. Residencies during that time were quite rigorous. People would take call every other night in addition to working days and weekends, and it was about 100 hours a week of training. So you can imagine it was extremely daunting. That didn't dissuade me. I had a very supportive husband, so he was more than happy to help support me during my surgical residency. He did an anesthesia residency. And it wasn't until after 4 years of medical school, 4 years in the U.S. Navy, and 3 years in surgical residency that I actually laid eyes on a woman faculty member who was a surgeon and was married and with children. So it took me that long to actually see my first role model. She was godlike to me. I wanted to actually touch her, but certainly that wouldn't be appropriate.
Did you become friends, though? I mean, did
yes,
you become
and she
collegial?
She was a very prominent endocrine surgeon, actually at Yale, and we became friends and colleagues. Yeah. So yes.
I want to ask you about a specific surgical assignment that you were given in January of 1989 in Washington, D.C., and this was an assignment to potentially perform surgery, I should say, if the need arose.
Yes, that was quite an experience. I was in the United States Navy, and in the U.S. Navy, as a surgeon in particular, you have a number of collateral positions, one of which was in the military, you manned the inauguration. And George H.W. Bush was being inaugurated that day. My boss asked me to help with the inauguration. It turned out to be quite an event. I was in the U.S. Capitol building with a surgical team. We had an anesthesiologist, a nurse, a scrub tech, and myself, and we were there exclusively for George H.W. Bush in case anything happened. We were only to stabilize him prior to him being taken to George Washington. Certainly, we were all.
This wasn't a medical facility, though, that you were in.
No. We were all praying that nothing happened. Our operating room table was actually an oak table used in an office, and we held intravenous bags that were held on a hat stand. And we sat in the background praying that absolutely nothing happened. And, of course, nothing did.
An amazing story. I mean, I look at you, Dr. Leaser, and I imagine at George H.W. Bush's inauguration, maybe you hadn't even thought about a medical career at this point. You represent a different generation.
29. Correct.
You, Dr. Leaser, are currently a vascular surgery fellow. And I want to ask, what does it mean exactly to be a surgery fellow? And what is the average day like for a surgery fellow?
It's a great question. I've had a lot of patients say, but you're a woman, not a fellow. So a fellowship is specialty training after completion of 4 years in medical school. And then in my case, 7 years of general surgery residency, because it's a 5 minimum, and some academic programs require 2 years of research as well, such as where I went at University of Maryland. And then vascular surgery fellowship in specific is 2 years. Most fellowships are 1 to 2 years. So it's specialty training before becoming a full-fledged board-certified surgeon who can practice on their own. And let's see, a typical day usually begins around 6 at the hospital with rounds, and the operating room usually begins between 7 and 8. And that's where we usually spend most of our day. And then there's usually afternoon rounds, and hopefully you get out of the hospital somewhere in the evening. In fellowship, we're on call during the week every night for our specific hospital, and then we help each other out on the weekends. And so I'm on about every third weekend covering 3 hospitals, making rounds and operating when the need arises.
Dr. Laser, I'm listening to your story, and I see you sitting next to Dr. Zeiger, and I'm thinking Dr. Zeiger got so far through her career before she ever met another woman surgeon. Talk about the professional environment that you're existing in now in 2015.
Quite different, I think, from hearing some stories and stories that I've heard in the past. I feel quite lucky, and it was one of the reasons, actually, that I chose to stay training at University of Maryland after interviewing at almost 30 places for residency. I did visit some places still that had no female faculty. And it makes me even more impressed with the stories that I hear about the female surgeons who came before me, because I chose not to fight that battle personally and go somewhere where there were no female faculty. And I felt so lucky to come back and be able to stay at somewhere like University of Maryland, where I had a number of excellent female faculty role models. And my general surgery training program was, and actually my vascular surgery fellowship is 50% female. And I think that's above the national average. And I think a lot of trainees flock to where they have the female role models.
Dr. Lazy, we've heard you talk about the rigors of your residency, your surgery work as a fellow. And at some point along this path, you became a mom. Talk about how that changed the game for you.
180 degrees. Yes, I first became a mom during my research years. I was fortunate to be able to plan it that way so that I could become a first-time mom while I had a little bit less rigorous of a clinical schedule. It definitely affects your priorities and how you feel about staying those extra hours at work and when you get called back in, and when you have either a small baby at home who then it means you might need to go to the hospital with your pump machine and pump. or this past weekend when I went back to the hospital and my son, who's now 4 and a half, old enough to realize what the pager going off means, and he said, "Throw that thing away, Mommy. Does that mean you have to go back to work now?" And it just makes everything a little bit different.
So I wonder, though, about the feelings of fellow surgeons when you are at work. And you've got these contingencies in your schedule because of motherhood. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is that something that you feel sideways glances about, resentment about? Is that where is the profession at this point with that?
That's a good question. I mean, I think I can only speak for myself. I'm not sure what people say behind my back, but I basically was very, very conscious of trying to be very almost secretive about any needs that I had to take care of. I would run in the call room to pump or try to get any other coverage I could, because I, especially still being a trainee, I didn't want to lose any respect or have anyone think that I was less serious. So I really tried to keep it all on the inside, or a few female colleagues to say, "Can you cover this for me?" or tell them that I'll be right back or something like that. I tried to really just not bring any of those things up. I'm not sure how much that is echoed in other fields, But that's how I tried to handle things.
Only she who attempts the absurd can achieve the impossible, right? That's the quote that that follows Dr. Adriana Laser's contribution to the anthology Being a Woman Surgeon. Dr. Laser is here with fellow contributors Dr. Martha Zeiger and Dr. Preeti John. And Dr. John, by the way, is also the editor of this collection of 60 stories, contributions. Let's hear your story, Dr. John. I mean, what inspired you to pursue this career?
As a medical student, I always thought I wanted to do pediatrics because I loved children. And during my surgical rotation, I loved the fact that I was able to use my hands and perform procedures and make a huge difference in people's lives almost overnight or in a matter of hours. I didn't need to wait for medications to act, and the satisfaction that I felt at the end of my surgical rotation was incomparable to anything else, and I decided that I wanted to do surgery for the rest of my life. I did an internship at the end of my medical training in India, and I haven't looked back.
Before I let you all return to healing people and getting on with the rest of your surgical day, let me just finally go around the table and ask each of you to share your thoughts about gender equality at this point in your profession, surgery, the perception versus the reality. Talk to me about pay, opportunities for promotion, about scrutiny from your peers. Just how level is the playing field? Maybe Dr. Zeiger, I'll begin with you.
Well, I think there's been a sea change since the time when I went into training. It was a true anomaly to be a woman surgical trainee. And as I mentioned, I had no role models in the beginning of my career. Now, in medical school, we have 50% women. That was not true when I was in medical school. We have close to 30% trainees in surgery who are women. And we do have women faculty present. Having said that, I still believe that there is much progress still to be made, and that is in terms of opportunities, especially leadership opportunities. If you look at the academic institutions across our country, only a handful of women are chairs of surgery. And if you look at opportunities in different academic settings, I think it's still true that women are afforded less opportunity and less pay overall, and this is an inequity that we need to address. I think a lot of leaders, especially at our institution, are very much aware of this and are actively seeking to correct any inequities that are currently in place.
You said a lot there. Do you have anything you want to add, Dr. John, Dr. Laser?
I think from my perspective, since I haven't entered the workforce in that way yet and still in my training program, I guess I've thought about it so far mostly in terms of watching some of my colleagues in medical school decide and what some of the thought processes were behind their decisions in terms of which field to go into. And I think a lot of the decisions are based on expectations that go along with different surgical specialties, for example, and in a broader sense, surgery versus some of the medical fields in terms of hours, acuity of patients, call expectations, length of cases. And we see that reflected in the fact that the least percentage of females are present in some of the surgical specialties, such as vascular, cardiothoracic, orthopedics, and neurosurgery.
Dr. John, I'm going to let you have the last word here. And I maybe just talk about role models once more and what this book is doing in that regard.
Sure. I have to say that during my residency, all my role models were men. It's only during fellowship that I was exposed to, you know, women who I worked with closely. And at that time, I had a woman who was my mentor, who was a role model to me. During my residency and fellowship, I never perceived any differences in treatment just because of the fact that I was a woman. I know that's not always the case in different surgical training programs around the country, but the experiences are very different from those in the 1970s and the 1980s that our senior surgeons experienced. They were trailblazers in terms of what they experienced and what they had to put up with. Once I finished training, the only differences I perceived were in perceptions of residents. When it's time to make evaluations at the end of rotations, I think women are perceived a little differently than their male colleagues. And this is probably a result of unconscious biases, but I think it is something that we should talk about and recognize.
Critical care surgeon Dr. Preeti John, endocrine surgeon Dr. Martha Zeiger, and vascular surgery fellow Dr. Adriana Laser. Their stories are all part of the anthology Being a Woman Surgeon. This book is the first anthology of its kind. It's full of all sorts of contributions from female surgeons of many different specialties and disciplines. The book has got all sorts of different kinds of writing in it, essays, interviews, poems. And I want to let listeners know that Dr. Preeti John is going to be hosting a panel of fellow women surgeons in celebration of this anthology, this book, next Thursday evening, March 12th at 7 p.m. It's happening at the Enoch Pratt Free Library. And you can find out more about that event online at prattlibrary.org. And Dr. Zeiger, Dr. Laser, and Dr. John, thank you all for the work you do, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.